You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. In his State of the Union address in January, President Bush announced the Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, a five-year, $15 billion initiative to turn the tide in the global effort to fight the HIV/AIDS pandemic, which has killed at least 20 million people of the more than 60 million people infected so far. Today in Africa, nearly 30 million people have the AIDS virus, and the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief would help the most afflicted countries in Africa and the Caribbean. We'll talk about this emergency plan for AIDS relief. We will talk about what has been done to combat this pandemic and what still needs to be done in Africa and worldwide. And we'll wonder what we can do if we are so moved. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, who is Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa and scholar in residence at the Institute on Globalization and the Human Condition at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. He is also senior advisor to the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. He is co-chair of the Leadership Program Committee for the International AIDS Conference to be held in Mexico City in August of 2008. And he's coming to Wisconsin and will be the distinguished lecturer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison this coming Monday night. And we will give you some more information on that a little bit later in the program. Stephen Lewis joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us.
Not at all.
You are former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. You just ended your service there at the end of the last year?
Yes, I had been in the job about 5.5 years and ended on December 31st.
Yeah, and no one else has been named to replace you yet?
No, peculiarly that's the case. I must admit to you, frankly, I don't quite understand it myself. But the wheels turn slowly with the United Nations, Joy. I love the organization, but you cannot fault it for speed.
Yeah. Now, in the years that you were in this position, did you see progress in fighting this pandemic in Africa?
Yes, there are various dimensions of progress. The African governments themselves have truly come alive to the pandemic and are moving heaven and earth to confront it in most of the high prevalence countries. And the treatment is being rolled out. The availability of antiretroviral drugs, which keep people alive, is gradually reaching more and more people, but it's still pretty appalling, the shortfall. We're treating about 20% of the adults who need treatment. We're treating, believe it or not, fewer than 10% of the children who need treatment, and that means millions will die before they are reached. And this is one of the abominations of the pandemic, that the international community has responded so slowly and with such passivity to the terrible carnage. The one area that we've made virtually no progress on, and it's really heartbreaking, is in the area of the vulnerability of women. And since this is International Women's Day, it's worth noting that women are disproportionately vulnerable. They're infected in much larger numbers than men, and particularly in the 15 to 24 year old age group, the disproportion is pronounced, and women are dying in their 20s and 30s in hallucinatory numbers. It's just appalling, and we have not dealt with gender inequality.
Well, why are women being infected and dying more than men?
Well, they're more susceptible physiologically and culturally. The passage of the virus to the woman, she's more vulnerable by virtue simply of the nature of the anatomy. Mm-hmm. The the sensitive and porous nature of the vaginal walls, and then the cultural inequality, the fact that there is no sexual autonomy for women. They can't say no to predatory sex. They can't say wear a condom. They can't negotiate safe sex. Incredibly enough, Joy, one of the riskiest situations for young women in Africa today, as studies are showing, is to be married, because the prevalence rates in marriage are often higher than the prevalence rates among single sexually active women in the surrounding community. Younger women marry older men. The younger women think they're in a monogamous relationship. The older men bring the virus into the marriage.
We're going to check our weather forecast and then continue talking with and welcoming your questions for Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa, talking about the efforts to combat AIDS, HIV in Africa and worldwide, for that matter. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with a guest who will be appearing in Madison on Monday night. He is the next UW-Madison Distinguished Lecture Series guest. He will be speaking at the Memorial Union on Monday, March the 12th at 7:30. Tickets are available through the UW Union Theater box office. They are free, but call 608-262-2201 for more information. Stephen Lewis is the former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa, and he is co-chair of the Leadership Committee for the International AIDS Conference to be held in Mexico City in August of 2008, among many other things. And we welcome your questions for him about the AIDS pandemic worldwide and in Africa. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Stephen Lewis, you talked about how slow the international community has been to respond to this crisis. What do you think of President Bush's announcement in the State of the Union address for this emergency plan, 5 years, $15 billion? Is that good enough?
Well, it's not nearly good enough, but in fact, it was when it was announced, we're coming to the end of the 5 years. And when it was announced, it took everybody aback, because I don't think anyone had expected the president to announce anything quite so far-reaching and so ambitious. And in fact, the presidential emergency plan, although it has been subject to a variety of criticisms because there are aspects of it which are wanting, you can't pump that much money into a crisis, $3 billion a year, without having some dramatic and important effect. And there's no question that a lot more people are in treatment and a lot more prevention is being done, and some of the money is being directed towards orphan kids. One of the worst dimensions of this pandemic, Joy, is the incredible number of orphan children who are left behind when you have so much death. There are millions of orphan children now in southern Africa, more than a million in many countries, sometimes representing 10 to 15% of the total population, who are bewildered and frantic, and they don't understand what's happened to them, and it's hard for the communities to absorb them. As a matter of fact, the heroes of the continent at the moment are the grandmothers. It's unbelievable what's happening, the way the grandmothers bury their own adult children, and then they begin at the ages of 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, they begin to parent again. Mm. And these little orphan grandchildren of theirs, who have watched their parents die, utterly traumatized by the experience, they meet the trauma of the grandmothers who have buried their children, and it's a relationship. It's as though we're redefining the human family. There's never been anything in history that's a precedent for millions of grandmothers looking after millions of orphan grandchildren.
Yeah, Stephen Lewis, it's just so mind-boggling and so very sad to hear about these millions of orphan kids and the low number of people actually getting treatment. for the HIV virus and all the death. And I think a lot of us just feel so helpless. What can we do about it?
Well, I don't think anyone need feel helpless because, as in all human calamities, you know, you don't submit to futility. You grit your teeth. Mm-hmm. You keep on fighting. One day the pendulum swings. The world comes to its senses. Africa prevails. I mean, this is the nature of the human struggle. But there, in the United States in particular, you have magnificent organizations on the ground. You have Save the Children and CARE and Doctors Without Borders and World Vision. And if you want to look for a UN agency that can perform well, UNICEF. And they do excellent work on the ground. And in most communities in the United States, there are branches. There are certainly locations where you can correspond, participate in policy, raise some money, get involved with some contact politically as well. I mean, it is possible through churches and community groups and simple and universities and high schools and community colleges. It's amazing what a renaissance of interest there is at the grassroots in the United States. It isn't as easily reflected at the political level. By the way, it's the same in my country. As a Canadian, the people of the country are engaged. The political leadership is less engaged. This is one of those situations where the public is ahead of its politicians, I think.
Yeah. How did you get involved in this cause?
I was, in the late 90s, the deputy at UNICEF, nominally in charge of overall programming internationally, and suddenly realized that every time we tried to do something in Africa to reduce maternal mortality or to reduce infant mortality or to launch immunization programs, every time we did it, we were sabotaged by the virus. We were losing ground every time we turned around. And I was at UNICEF from 95 to 99, and when I left, I wanted very much to be engaged in the struggle against the pandemic. It consumes you once you see it. Once you're on the ground and you visit the hospital wards, adult and pediatric, and you are out in the rural areas and you see the incredibly heroic struggle of people against adversity. They're so resilient and they're dying and there's so much care needed and there's so much poverty and there's such a desperate need for food. You watch all these elements of the human condition and you want to help. And I was lucky enough to be able to do some work with UNAIDS, which is the organization that coordinates UN activity. And then, quite unexpectedly, the former Secretary General Kofi Annan, whom I'd known for many years, I was a long time ago the Canadian ambassador to the UN, Kofi asked me to take on the envoy job, and I did. I'm not a sweet innocent, Joy. I've done a number of things in life, but I was quite unprepared for the death. I had no idea what I would be encountering.
Yeah. You also were involved in a best-selling book called Race Against Time, and I see here you wrote in that, I have spent the last 4 years watching people die.
Right. Right.
And frustrated at the lack or the slowness of help.
Yes, I guess I don't fully understand what it is about Africa. You know, I think back to 1994 when in 100 days 800,000 people were slaughtered in the genocide in Rwanda and the world raised not a finger. And then I think of what's happening now in Darfur. You know, we've had nearly 4 years of brutal and senseless violence and killing and rape. And the world knows exactly what's going on, and we haven't been able to subdue it or even appropriately to intervene. There's something about the continent of Africa. It's as though the people are expendable, and yet this is a very vibrant continent with an enormous intelligence and sophistication and generosity of spirit at the grassroots. And I've been going back and forth from Africa now for 47 years. I will absolutely admit I fell in love with the continent a long time ago, and so it's really heartbreaking to see the way people are treated and the lack of the urgency of the response.
Well, we have a caller, so let me bring on Amy in Milwaukee. Hi, Amy.
Hi. Well, I just have to say that a year ago in January of 2006, I heard a story on National Public Radio. Jason Bobien is a reporter in Africa for NPR, and he interviewed Mary, who was living in Uganda around the age of 80, raising 14 grandchildren after all of her 10 of her children had died, and most of them from AIDS, and it broke my heart. And what we did was began a grandmother project in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And in researching and looking for information, I came upon your website, and I have to say, well, you're a hero to me. Mm-hmm. After reading much of what you've written and many of your speeches, and I'm really, really grateful for the work you do. We have traveled to Uganda and seen what you've seen and met the grandmothers, and for us, we've worked in three villages, but, you know, the challenge for us is, one, it's we have women here in Milwaukee who are from Uganda who are helping us with the project, but for us it's about building relationships and community there as well as here. Many women have come together here and gotten to know each other, too, and it's just been a wonderful journey. But one of the questions I have is, we feel it's a real challenge working in the rural community in Uganda and trying to connect with services or other projects working in the area as well, so we can all sort of work together. And it's not for lack of goodwill out there, and I know a lot of people are doing work, and it's, how do we come together, how do we connect with others so that we're, I don't know, I guess we don't feel like we're doing this alone.
Joy, I feel almost self-conscious talking in personal terms, but let me do that quickly before you come up to your break. I have a little foundation in Canada called the Stephen Lewis Foundation, and we suddenly realized in the hundreds of projects that we're now dealing with in 13 or 14 countries that the grandmothers were emerging more and more as people who were sustaining the life of communities, and they were doing it without food and without money to pay school fees for the orphan kids and fees for hospital care and shelter. And we brought, last August, when the International AIDS Conference was in Toronto, we brought 100 African grandmothers from Africa to Toronto to meet with 200 Canadian grannies. It was a remarkable 2.5-day session where the African grandmothers poured out their hearts and said what they were dealing with. They drove the agenda, they ran the meeting, and everybody came away with a much greater sense of what was required. And I would say to your caller that if she wanted to get, we now have 145 grandmothers groups across Canada relating with grandmothers in the United States, and four or five grandmothers groups. I met with the World Bank last week in Washington to talk about grandmothers, because it's emerging as such a major issue. And if you wanted to make contact with our foundation, we're dealing with three or four grandmothers groups in the States now. We could actually put you in touch with others and make you feel less isolated.
I do need to take the break. Amy, if you want to hold on through the news, I'd be happy to talk further about this. I hope you can. Talking with Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. And talking about the AIDS pandemic worldwide and in Africa, and we'll continue after we check National Public Radio News. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:36 on this Thursday, March the 8th. And we are talking this hour with the former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa, who will be in Wisconsin, in Madison, on Monday for the Distinguished Lecture Series at UW-Madison. Stephen Lewis is also the co-chair of the Leadership Program Committee for the International AIDS Conference to be held in Mexico City in August of 2008, and he's scholar-in-residence at the Institute on Globalization and the Human Condition at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. We are talking with him about the global AIDS pandemic and the latest in the fight to control AIDS, HIV in Africa. And we welcome your questions and Thoughts for him at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. And we have Amy in Milwaukee still with us on the line. And Amy, you were talking about a grandmother's program that you are involved in the Milwaukee area. And I guess I bet you a lot of listeners would like to know exactly what that is. What are you doing?
Well, we have a lot of women and some men who have come together. We began the project. We're called Grandmothers Beyond Borders. And what we did to begin the project was to go to Uganda. We had some connections in Lugazi, which is about an hour outside of the capital, Kampala. And some folks there were able to identify grandmothers who were raising their grandchildren because their own children had died from AIDS. And so a few of us went last year to meet them and to listen and to hear their stories. And I can tell you, just the being with, listening and hearing the stories was probably the most important part of our whole project up to this point. And what we heard and what we saw, I could just echo what Dr. Lewis has said, and that is that, you know, the lack of food, clean water, there's illness. I mean, it's really quite overwhelming. But these grandmothers they have such courage, grace, and beauty. Anyway, we met them, and we now have 35 grandmothers in our project, and I have to say one grandfather, Joseph. Mm. And what we do is we provide some financial support for school fees. We have created a medical account for the grandparents in a local hospital. We have provided some porridge fees for porridge for some of the primary schools. Really small things, little things that have seemed to make a difference. But one of the most important things, I think, that we've noticed since we've been working with the grandmothers and others in the three villages is that the community themselves have come together around the elders. I think because of the war in the country and a lot of the problems that Uganda has experienced, these grandmothers said to us they felt isolated, they felt abandoned and alone. And what we've seen in the three villages is they had a Grandmother's Day, and they brought all the elders together, and they ate, and they sang, and it's just the community there is starting to rally around the elders as well. So it's just been an amazing experience. And we haven't raised a lot of money, but we've raised in a year about, I think it's close to about $25,000, and you know, a little goes a long way. And but it's really it's a project of the heart, and it's about the relationship building, and that's probably primarily the most important thing.
Amy, if I may just intercede for just a moment,
yes.
You sound like a lovely person, and it's a pleasure to hear you describe it. And I just remember that we're out here and deeply involved, and we can probably help you. Please make contact, and don't regard $25,000 as a small amount. $25,000 transforms whole communities. It's a monumental amount in Africa where people are living on less than a dollar a day.
Yeah, and more information on your website, Stephen Lewis, StephenLewisFoundation.org. You have information about this grandmother's project.
We sure do.
There.
We've got a lot of information about grandmothers, and
yeah.
Happy to incorporate and encourage others.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. Other callers to move on to here, and oops, wait a minute, I'm having a little issue here with my phone system, and I believe I have Jeanette and Nina on. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, and I wanted to thank your guests for the resources. And Mary, you're doing a great job in Milwaukee. I just wanted to comment. I'm a physician, and I have been working in the Nina and Appleton areas to help raise funds for a local group in the Emos region of Kenya. And I wanted to suggest that there are a couple of resources for physicians. As physicians, I think we have a unique ability to impact this this problem because of both physician incomes as well as our ability to help medically. And there's a great book that was just published last year by the American Medical Association Press called Awakening Hippocrates that was written to really describe how physicians like myself, who've never been involved in international healthcare, can really begin to help in areas of international healthcare. And I would suggest this to other physicians who might want to begin working to help internationally.
Yeah, may I ask you, Dr. Jeanette, what moved you to get involved in this?
I'm a pediatrician, and I think knowing there was an excellent series of articles published in The Lancet last year, I think in 2005, and that were written by a neonatologist, and it described the seriousness of the perinatal mortality, the mortality in fetal life and in early infancy in Africa and other areas of Eastern Africa.
Yeah. Stephen Lewis.
Well, I think that helping project, it's interesting that your callers have mentioned Uganda and Kenya, mm-hmm. which are adjacent to each other, and actually have some greater range of capacity to intervene. They're poor countries. They're not as poor as some of the countries in southern Africa. And being involved in both Kenya and Uganda is a very, very good idea. And a pediatrician involved. I mean, there are Physicians for Human Rights are deeply engaged in the AIDS pandemic. Doctors Without Borders, deeply engaged everywhere. And the articles in The Lancet to which the doctor refers have been supplemented recently by more and more material on what HIV and AIDS is doing to very young children. You know, Joy, when children are infected, there are 2 million children infected in Africa now. And if you don't reach them quickly, 50% of them die before the age of 2. Mm. 80% of them die before the age of 5. It's a true nightmare. And until recently, we haven't even had what the doctors call pediatric formulations. We haven't even had the drugs to support these kids and keep them alive. Fortunately, thanks to the Clinton Foundation, and by the way, the Clinton Foundation is one of those rare groups who has a tremendous sense of urgency about what's going on, and they move with intense rapidity in response to everything, and they've negotiated with generic drug companies in India some new drugs for kids, which are available now extremely cheaply and will save a great many lives over the next 2 or 3 years. So a pediatrician involvement, a medical involvement in these things is always invaluable.
Yeah. Is the AIDS, HIV more widespread in Africa than anywhere else in the world?
Absolutely. Africa's the epicenter. There are about 40 million people infected across the world. Between 27 and 30 million of them are in are in Africa, with the concentration being in southern Africa. So you've got, 10% of the world's population and 2/3 of the world's infections.
And this is because of the neglect, or are there other reasons why it's more widespread there?
Well, it is said that the origin of the virus was monkeys in the jungles of what was Zaire, is now the Congo. And in the 1930s, scholars argue the virus was passed to humans either through some kind of scraping of the body and the transfer of blood when humans came into contact with primates, or possibly killing and sharing of blood in some way. And then gradually the spread began, and in Africa it is spread overwhelmingly heterosexually. And Africa, of course, because of slavery and colonialism and the Cold War, Africa has relied heavily on trade routes and on transport and on migrant workers, thousands of workers coming from other countries to work in the mines of South Africa or Botswana. So you've had a ready-made situation for the virus to spread in contact with commercial sex workers. You know, huge numbers of men who are removed from their families for months at a time. They're in their sexually active years. The nature of the continent has intensified the spread, and now we're fighting to instill prevention to overcome that.
Our guest is Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for AIDS, HIV in Africa. He will be in Wisconsin, and Madison on Monday for the Distinguished Lecture Series at UW-Madison. You can talk to him right now, though, by calling 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We're talking about the global AIDS pandemic and the latest on the fight to control it, especially in Africa. And we welcome your questions and thoughts for him. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. On Monday, March the 12th at 7:30, our guest this hour will be the guest speaker for the UW-Madison Distinguished Lectures Lecturer Series. You can get more information on this by calling the UW Union Theater box office, 608-262-2201. Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa, and our next caller is David in Waterford. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I have a question, you know, sort of like a layman thinking through this thing a little bit about getting medication to the afflicted people in Africa. And I know that there's drugs approved to help keep the virus at bay. And I wondered if there was some plans in place to aggressively and vigorously manufacture and distribute these pharmaceuticals in Africa. I can appreciate the fact that there must be a huge demand for them, in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of tablets or capsules are needed every day. So I just was curious if people were thinking in that arena, or are they thinking simply of importing them from the Europe and the Americas, these medications?
Oh, I see. It's a very interesting question, David. In truth, the answer is both avenues are being pursued. For the present, the largest numbers of drugs that come into the countries, the antiretroviral drugs to keep people alive, they're coming from India, from the generic companies in India, because they're being produced at a very, very much reduced cost. The brand name pharmaceutical drugs are much more expensive. So even the United States, the president's plan, which began by purchasing brand name drugs, has gradually shifted to purchasing the generic equivalents, which are absolutely equivalent in every way, but are so much cheaper. Gradually, as you can imagine, and as you have instinctively suggested, Africa itself feels that it should be manufacturing these drugs. And so manufacturing plants are now available in South Africa and turning out drugs. And there are plants being discussed and put in place in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, and in Nigeria. There are discussions in Zambia and Rwanda. Everybody understands the logic of Africa being able to produce its own medication.
Sure. You know, thank you. I do wonder, though, about the virulent nature of the virus and whether or not generic drugs will be able to address the virus as it develops over the next, you know, decades. And so I wonder if a partnership with American pharmaceuticals would be in the best interest of Africa.
Again, that's an excellent question, because the generic drugs at the moment are providing what we call first-line drugs, the first response to the evidence of full-blown AIDS in an individual. Over the course of time, usually 3 or 4 years only, 10 to 15% of the people who started on drugs develop a resistance to those drugs. And then you need second line, you need a new combination, and third line, another combination as resistance develops. And only the brand named companies, only the major pharmaceutical manufacturers are handling the second and third line drugs, that whole variety of additional interventions. And those prices are incredibly high at the moment. There's no way poor countries could handle it. So again, the Clinton Foundation is in the midst of doing some serious negotiation with those drug companies. and working on a partnership with Africa, which would help in the long run. As you can imagine, these things are very difficult because they involve the balance sheets of the pharmaceutical companies, and they involve research and development and intellectual property and all these complicating factors. And the major pharmaceutical industry has not been very forthcoming, to tell you the truth, with lowering its prices in order to meet this tremendous scourge. They're gradually shifting their ground over the last few years, but it's been slow. I would have wished it would have been much faster.
You know, I was doing some research on this program via the internet, and I just found that U2's Bono is going to be the cover story of Vanity Fair, I think the June issue, and is all going to be devoted apparently on his efforts, especially fighting AIDS in Africa. And we did have a caller who wants to know what you think of the work of Bono. Is it Bono or Bono? Bono.
It's Bono. Mm-hmm. And he's actually the guest editor of Vanity Fair in June.
Okay.
And he's done that before. He guest edited a major British newspaper for a day and made quite an impact. He's an astonishingly gifted guy. I get a kick out of watching Bono because, like so many of the celebrities, but sort of preeminent amongst them, he's been fighting on questions of debt and trade and turning his attention to poverty and AIDS very, very strongly, especially in Africa. He has tremendous influence. As you know, he's also established this new product line with a number of corporations, from Motorola to The Gap, the red products, where you buy and a small percentage of the profit goes to what we call the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria. I have some questions about all of that personally, but I'm mentioning it because it shows the very positive instincts of Bono. Just think for a moment, Joy. You've got Bono and Geldof and Oprah Winfrey and mm-hmm. Alicia Keys and Madonna and Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt and Richard Gere. This emergence of celebrities to fight the pandemic is occurring in the absence of political leadership. It's such an interesting phenomenon at the moment that we have celebrity leadership to compensate for the absence of political leadership. And it emphasizes again, I think, the need for the public, for people, just rank and file ordinary citizens, to get engaged, because there is a kind of vacuum which requires a response.
Yeah, do you think that's because the political leadership is lacking, because the politicians don't see a political payback from getting involved?
Well, I find that hard to believe, because there's such a strong feeling mm-hmm. in most of the G8 countries that something should be done. I mean, people are really aware and generous and compassionate mm-hmm. and want something to happen. I don't understand the disconnect, I must admit to you. And by the way, I sat in a parliament for more than 15 years, and I'm not unfamiliar with the political wiles, but I don't fully understand the mm-hmm. the unwillingness of the politicians to be galvanized on this issue. Because frankly, if we delivered on our promises, if the G8 delivered on the commitments it made, for example, at the G8 summit in the United Kingdom in July of 2005, we could beat this pandemic. But we're always betraying the promises we make within days of making them.
Jennifer in Silver Lake is with us. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, Joy. Dr. Lewis, thank you so much for discussing this topic. It's so important. I actually am the executive director of a small nonprofit, and we're doing work in Malawi, in a very rural community. And I heard you say earlier that one of the biggest issues is that the men have to leave and go to South Africa to work, and that's exactly what we experienced in Malawi, as I'm sure you're aware. And so one of the things that we've been doing in that community, I mean, we've built a medical clinic and we've done some other things, but as we partner with the community, everything that we do there then becomes the property of the community to run and use the proceeds of that to create more jobs and hopefully to improve the ability of that community to sustain itself. And I'm wondering if you think the impact of that approach will be to helping with the decrease of this pandemic as the men hopefully are able to find work locally, stay with their families, and then not be in the position where they're tempted to be involved with the sex trades in South Africa and then bringing back home the disease to their families in Malawi.
Actually, that's a very artful way of viewing it, and you're clearly making an important contribution. And by the way, there's an equivalent contribution to be made for the women who, if they have a little bit of microcredit, small loans, or any resources at all, they do what they call income generation, which you would be familiar with, where they may grow some crops, or they may sew some clothes, or they may prepare some food, and it brings a little bit of money into the family, which keeps the family together and secures the family. Malawi has a population of 10 to 12 million. It's an incredibly poor country. Joy, it has a total of 100 doctors in the entire public sector. I think there are two pediatricians for the whole country of 10 to 12 million. They have a terrible human capacity problem, but they're struggling hard, and they're making some progress. And to help in the rural areas in the way your caller is suggesting is really admirable. I mean, that's an important contribution, and I encourage your Jeanette to continue it.
Well, we're at the end of the hour. I hope you have a nice visit when you come to Madison on Monday. Thanks a lot for being with us.
I'm looking forward. Bye-bye.
Stephen Lewis, former UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS in Africa. He is going to be speaking in Madison, a part of the Distinguished Lecture Series on Monday at UW-Madison. Thanks to Karen Prager and Leo Duran for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.